Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. We welcome you back to New World Next Week. Everything you need you can find at NewWorldNextWeek.com. Previous episodes, audio, video, documentation, so much more here on our now 207th episode of New World Next Week. James, let's kind of begin with almost a good news next week story that we typically try and end on these episodes, and we'll do that as well on this episode, but we'll take it via Reuters and via your own Twitter account at Corbett Report. Venezuelans turn to bitcoins to bypass socialist currency controls. Tech-savvy Venezuelans looking to bypass dysfunctional economic controls are turning to the Bitcoin virtual currency to obtain dollars, make internet purchases, and launch a little subversion. Two New York-based Venezuelan brothers hope this week to start trading on the first Bitcoin exchange in the socialist-run country, which already has at least several hundred Bitcoin enthusiasts. Due to currency controls introduced by the late President Hugo Chavez a decade ago, acquiring hard currency now means either requesting it from the state, which struggles to satisfy demand, or tapping a shadowy black market. Even small dollar transactions are out of the question for most Venezuelans. While current president Nicolas Maduro makes frequent tirades against black market traders whom he sees as part of the economic war on his government and the reason for inflation and shortages, he's never said anything about Bitcoin, and even now the government declines to comment on Bitcoin policy. That's created, of course, the gray market for bitcoins, a digital currency which is not governed by a central bank or controlled by a single source. Thanks, Reuters. Bitcoin values have soared and fallen over the last year as popular exchange Mt. Gox collapsed, as we reported for you here on New World Next Week, and some developed countries began to mull their own Bitcoin regulation. In Venezuela, using bitcoins can carry a scent of subversion. Quote, Bitcoin is a way of rebelling against the system, said Caracas-based software developer. Meanwhile, Gerardo Magolan, a business professor who styles himself as Dr. Bitcoin Venezuela, said he is, quote, teaching people to use Bitcoin to bypass the exchange controls, end quote. Currently, Bitcoin trading in Venezuela is between enthusiasts who use internet forums and social media to make ad hoc deals. The aforementioned Venezuelan-born brothers are Kevin and Victor Charles, now, of course, based in New York, this week hoping to open the Sir Bitcoin exchange, which will match Bitcoin buyers and sellers online. James, I looked back a little through our archives. You and I both, I believe, interviewed a guy that styles himself as the real Plato, who went on what he was calling the world's first Bitcoin road trip. And we did that all the way back in 2011, 3.5 years ago. But James, as recently as February of this year, we reported on the Mt. Gox collapse. And again, I think we both noted on our year-end episode of 2013 that Bitcoin and digital currency at large was one of the stories of 2013. And it continues into 2014 and, of course, now beyond, James.
It certainly does. But first, I think a couple of caveats might be in order for this story. It's quite a sensational headline, Venezuelans turn to Bitcoin to bypass socialist currency controls. But as the top comment on the Bitcoin subreddit notes, today I learned when a news article says people from X are doing Y, it usually means we have a few examples of people from X doing Y, but we want to try to imply that it is becoming a notable trend. So, I mean, let's take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, and even the article itself admits it's only several hundred Venezuelans out of a population of however many millions. So again, it's a small community, but it is an important idea at any rate, and I think it's the idea that needs to be harnessed. So in that regard, I would direct people to a really interesting presentation that Andreas Antonopoulos, as people might know, one of the leading proponents of Bitcoin, just gave at the Senate of Canada, which is doing hearings on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And it's a 2-hour presentation. I haven't watched it all yet, but from the half hour or so that I have found the time to watch, it really is an interesting presentation and interesting to hear the discussion. And part of at least one part of an answer to one of the questions that they ask him is about the idea of other cryptocurrencies being built on this blockchain technology. And Antonopoulos makes the point, yeah, you could create a cryptocurrency that's controlled by 12 central bankers and ask people to adopt that. I don't think people would, but you could do that. I mean, the point of this, for people who are uncomfortable with Bitcoin for whatever reason, is that this is an idea which is infinitely malleable. It has all sorts of permutations. The blockchain technology underlies this. Bitcoin is just one protocol, one algorithm that you can lay on top of that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Bitcoin itself. But the idea is you can circumvent all of these controls, these currency controls, in the wonderful socialist paradise of Venezuela, where they control the prices of goods, and as a result you have lineups around the block for toilet paper and rice and milk and sugar and other basic goods, and they're fingerprinting shoppers now in order to try to stop hoarding in this wonderful socialist paradise, and people are trying in any way they can to get around that, and cryptocurrency is one way to do it. So my hat's off again to the people of Venezuela for finding a way around it, and let's hope it becomes more than just those several hundred people that they're talking about.
James, I think this fits well with the story we covered just a couple of weeks ago, where protesters in Hong Kong are attempting to turn to what is called mesh networking. That, again, it's not the end-all be-all, it's not the Hosanna, this is the 100% cure, but it's the avenues, it's the ideas, it's opening a lot of this up, and it's decentralizing it. So, James, let's move to our second story, where a bit of truth slips out on the world stage. Biden admits U.S. allies funded ISIS and al-Qaeda in Sunni war against Assad. In a dramatic confession, Vice President Joe Biden stated that U.S. key allies in the Middle East were behind nurturing ISIS and bringing it back to life after its demise. Speaking at the Harvard Kennedy School on Thursday, October 2nd, Biden named Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Qatar as states that provided funds and arms to ISIS and other extremist groups in Syria, while he also accused Turkey of allowing foreign fighters to cross the border into Syria to join ISIS ranks. Now, James, we can point folks to this video, and there's no shortage of what gets, I think, jokingly referred to as, "Oh, that's Joe, ha ha ha, he's always putting his foot in his mouth, golly gee, isn't he a goofball." But this situation now, James, has actually kind of inflamed our Middle East partners, if you will. And again, these are the sort of terms that when you see these in the news, you got to kind of dig behind the scenes and exactly see what's going on. But here it is, pretty much laying it out, just as I think you noted well in your recent Shut Up Conspiracy Theorist video. Some crazy person, Hillary, noted, well, we funded these al-Qaeda guys. James?
Well, that's exactly right. I guess we can add Biden to the list of shut up conspiracy theorist labelers. It's interesting what's happening. This is certainly not the first admission from a high-ranking U.S. Government official that this is going on. We've seen this from a number of different officials, including a lot of military officials have been admitting that, yes, of course, our allies have been funding ISIS. Of course, they usually exclude the fact that America has been training them and supplying them as well, but at least it's a step towards the truth. It's a half-truth. And it is interesting to see that obviously this cat is out of the bag now. I mean, they're not going to pretend that this isn't going on, because it demonstrably is, and I think everyone who's been paying any attention knows it by now. It'll be interesting to see the ramifications of this, and given that they seem to be throwing their Gulf State allies under the bus here, I wonder if the Gulf State allies will turn tables and throw America under the bus and reveal some of the things that they've been doing. So there could be even some juicy infighting going on that might benefit us as we get some of the scraps from that table. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out geopolitically. But is it going to change what's going on in Iraq and Syria with the airstrikes and the military presence, the increasing military presence that they're now talking about, a 30-year war and all of this ridiculous nonsense? Probably not. I mean, I think they're going to continue with that plan unabated, so I'm not sure this changes anything in that regard, but we'll see. Maybe this will spur some interesting pieces of truth to come out under the wire.
And I believe I've seen buzz about some kind of new info about Saudi Arabia that's going to come out that will further cause geopolitical tension. So that remains to be seen. But James, as if that bit of Biden wasn't enough, I think I can liken it to how we've talked about when the Super Bowl or the World Cup comes to your town. It's about the same as when a big world globalist politician comes to your town. It goes completely locked down, like yesterday when Vice President Joe Biden came right here to Portland, Oregon to do a campaign stop with a good senator here, Jeff Merkley, who's actually, you know, down for GMO labeling. Like, he's, our two senators in Oregon here could be way, 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 way worse. Merkley and Wyden aren't very bad at all. And I wonder if Merkley actually wanted Biden or if the party paymaster said, you're getting this for your campaign thing. Shut up. Here it comes. But basically, you have someone come to your town that completely locks down traffic, completely locks down public transportation, ruins people getting to work, which, of course, those our politicians claim they care about the working family and all that, yada, yada. So there's ridiculous photos of not only the event, but also Joe Biden getting ice cream at the local ice cream place. And you can actually follow, and you can see some of my own tweets as well when you use hashtag BidenPDX. And I was tweeting that, you know, I really hoped he had time while he was here to talk about how Western intelligence groups created ISIS. It's always fun to kind of hop on those trending hashtags just to kind of drop a little bit of truth bombs when and where you can, James. Let's actually move to our third and final story this week, which I think, again, bookends well. And I think it's, I think both good news next week stories out of Latin America. For our third and final story, Acapulco's police force went on strike and no one cared. Let's grab this from the freethoughtproject.com and JG Vibes, and you ask the question, what would happen if the police in your town went on strike? Would it be like something out of The Purge, or would people actually organize and take care of themselves? Every community is different, and it's possible that different people would react differently, but for the most part, when these type of situations arise, people actually don't descend into madness. This past week, it was reported that police in Acapulco, Mexico, went on strike, and the people of the city, for the most part, do not seem to want them back. It turns out that without the transit police, there's less traffic. And without the municipal police, there's also been no noticeable increase in crime. Jeff Berwick, an Acapulco resident and founder of the Dollar Vigilante, said that people in the city have seemed much happier since the police went on strike. In a recent report, Berwick explained how traffic actually ran much smoother without the transit police, saying, quote, weeks went on, and you could tell that almost everybody had become aware of the lack of transit police, and no one was adhering to red lights if there wasn't any oncoming traffic. The majority of people began treating red lights like a yield sign. They'd slow down, check that no cars were coming, and if they weren't, they'd just roll through the red light instead of sitting there for a minute or two as traffic backed up behind them, he said. Now, while that may seem like one sort of little isolated thing, James, I think, one, it speaks well to the previous note of Biden wrecking traffic, but that the cops actually caused the traffic problems, and you could extrapolate that out to any other areas that, oh, the central bankers who are supposed to set they actually wreck the dollar, or the police that are supposed to enforce this actually just make that worse. So this article, again, from JG Vibes, wraps up by noting there's, of course, a need for community and property services and all those kind of things, but for the most part, they can be decentralized and they can be offered spontaneously by members of the community in a decentralized way. James?
What vile propaganda. If I recall anything from my public education, it's the fact that if the police are removed, people will instantly turn into murdering savages who will do anything to kill and let loose a torrent of blood, the likes of which we have never seen. Yes, what a great story. What a wonderful story this is. Again, proving that free humanity is better than controlled cattle-like humanity. And let's just contrast what's happening there in Acapulco to what happens on the streets of the United States every single day with a video that's making them rounds right now showing an unconstitutional checkpoint, as I'm sure we're all used to seeing in video form, at least by this point, where a citizen attempts to, successfully in this case, thankfully, invokes his constitutional rights to not be searched and to not answer questions. And the officer questioning him basically says, oh, I hate it when Americans pull this crap, or something like that. So that's that's the contrast, and it's a pretty blatant one, and I don't think anyone would be weeping tears of sadness if those types of beliefs were suddenly to disappear from the streets of the United States. It's all about the community policing, and if people check through to the link that you are providing with this story and watch the video, there's a firm in Detroit that is providing that kind of community policing service. It's not a police service. It's a private service that has reduced violent crime and increased property values in the places where it's patrolling. So again, there are success stories that don't have anything to do with government agencies and men with guns pretending to be the authority. So again, just a wonderful little story. And on that note, I guess we should note that Jeff Berwick is also currently organizing a little conference there in Acapulco, Anarcopoco. So you can go to anarcopoco.com for more on that and to find out more about what can be done to further extend this idea, not just traffic cops, but maybe we can get rid of other government laws, rules, regulations, and things that are binding free humanity and shackling them.
It puts the lie to the ridiculous idea that, oh, well, yeah, the only reason I'm not out robbing and stealing and killing people is because, you know, it's against the law. So, James, let's wrap up with a couple of other good news next week updates that, again, you can submit these stories to us on Twitter using hashtag good news next week. And, James, one from you, another one, Dublin city councillors vote against fluoride, and one from G.J. Salisbury, 3D printed heart saves the life of a 2-week-old baby, which, again, constantly reminded that we are living in the future already. It's happened. Some of the other New World Next Week updates from stories that we have followed recently as today, James, unfortunately, the EPA has approved Dow AgroSciences Agent Orange ingredient 2,4-D that we reported on here a few weeks ago, aka Enlist Duo. So again, that's our environmental protection agency here in the States. G.J. Salisbury also points out an interesting book called Panda Leaks shows and, of course, proves that the World Wildlife Federation is run by big business. They hire death squads and they censor their critics. But what would you expect from an organization set up by the Rockefellers and Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands and other Nazi-connected, eugenics-obsessed so-called elites? There's also a documentary called The Silence of the Pandas. I can provide you some links. It seems to kind of bob and weave whether or not this documentary lasts online. So if folks can find actually a better copy of The Silence of the Pandas documentary, please tweet it to us. And meanwhile, ABC is developing an MK Ultra CIA miniseries, James, because there aren't enough sort of intel-connected propaganda shows on television. But speaking of media, James, I think folks may know as we wrap this episode up that it's my day job. I actually work in commercial radio. And I did used to work for Ground Zero, but actually moved to a rock and roll station several months ago. And that lets me kind of do different, more in my wheelhouse kind of things related to music. So I've been able to actually interview bands recently. And I had a huge blast last week actually interviewing Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes. So I'll provide that link for folks if they want to check that out, and also some of the other recent interviews with bands that I've done. And again, I don't call it Media Monarchy for nothing. I am a music-obsessed guy and actually hope to have a lot of more interesting details and info, James, as I sort of infiltrate corporate media and try and give it the Media Monarchy twist, James.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, for anyone who's listening to this on the Truth Seeker app, or anyone who uses the Truth Seeker app that I have linked up on the front page to listen to Corbett Report and other media on the go on their mobile device, they're currently doing a Kickstarter campaign to develop an upgrade to their app for the first time since 2010. So they're looking for some funds to that. We'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and support them if that's something that you're interested in. So I think we'll leave it there for this week. James, thank you again for 3 great stories. Let's do it again next week.
All right, man. Thanks so much.